This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Obama champions faith-based initiatives and moves his campaign rhetoric to the center. Will his liberal supporters see it as betrayal? Plus, was oil the big motivator for the Iraq war? And which companies cut deals with Iraqi oil producers? We'll hit these topics and more on today's Bloggers Roundtable. Joining us this week are Michael D. Cobb-Bowen. He's the creator of cobb.typepad.com, Liza Saboteur of Culture Kitchen, and Sharon Toomer, founder and managing editor of blackandbrownnews.com. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Howdy.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. So, Michael, I'll start with you. On our show last week, political contributor Mary Frances Berry called this the pander period of the election. She's referring to the trend of candidates moving to the center and trying to please certain constituencies. So, with the primary behind him, Barack Obama is definitely moving to the center. He's announced support for warrantless wiretaps, the recent Supreme Court ruling overturning a D.C. gun ban, and faith-based initiatives. Now, is that a flip-flop, or is he just doing what's smart to get elected?
Well, he's doing smart things. From my perspective, he's now just saying some things that are common sense. The only surprising thing here for me is how long it's taken Obama boys and Obama girls across the country to wake up and smell the waffles. I've been looking to see, you know, how long Obama has gotten a pass as a phenomenon, where now he has to come and say some things that actually make common sense. Maybe he's out of new ideas. And these are old ideas that also do make sense. I mean, it sounds very much like to me what George W. Bush talked about in terms of healing and compassionate conservatism. It shows to me that his heart is in the right place, but that doesn't necessarily make for good policy.
Well, Liza, when you look at this, do you think that liberals and, you know, Obama supporters come in various political flavors, but do you think liberals in particular are going to be annoyed with this?
It's not so much annoyance, because this is not about, you know, who's a better cheerleader. But, for example, with the warrantless wiretapping and the retroactive immunity to the telecoms for having basically aided and abetted the Bush administration's illegal wiretapping of civilians, that's a big one. And Obama runs the He's really treading here in deep waters in terms of tarnishing his reputation, and not just flip-flopping. We're talking about really, really going back on some fundamentals. So he spent a whole year saying that he would go after the telcos, and that you know, FISA would have to be absolutely looked up, you know, up and down. So it's you know. When you spent 18 months talking about change, and then all of a sudden you're saying, well, you know, we have to go back to doing the same thing that we always did here in Washington, it's a huge gamble that he's taking on that. And so, you know, I can understand speaking to different constituencies and trying to find a not middle ground, but a common ground, which is very different from moving to the center ideologically. I mean, you can't all of a sudden give up on your core values. So that's, you know, the period now here where most people are on vacation and not necessarily paying attention. But when, you know, time comes for the real campaigning, he can't take that gamble of just basically saying he's going to walk away from his core values.
Sharon, why don't you dig in a little bit on faith-based initiatives? Because that's something, you know, Senator Obama also made a big speech at an AME conference and or an AME church, and really dug into his Christianity. It was a personal speech, but it was also obviously a political speech. And then his support for faith-based initiatives. What do you think of all that religion?
Well, I think that out of the current faith-based initiative, the Black community is the least to benefit from that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure if it's he wanting to extend it, not the same model that doesn't work now for the Black community, but
why do you
I'm not
say
sure
that it doesn't work for the Black community?
Meaning a lot of Black churches aren't getting those funds. And that's, you know, there have been a few pieces on that where, I mean, a few articles where black churches are not the beneficiaries of all this faith-based funding out there. Mm-hmm. And so if Barack Obama is talking about extending it to where black churches, black community is going to benefit from this initiative, then I'm not sure that's such a bad thing.
Before we wrap it up, Michael, back to you. Right to bear arms, Supreme Court decision, support by Obama. How do you think that plays after his bitterness guns comment?
I think the right to bear arms is a fundamental constitutional right, and I think Obama has realized that it is not a fight that he can win with the majority of Americans. I'd also like to touch again on FISA. This is something that the Bush administration has been reversed on, particularly in the Hamden case. And the Congress after that has rewritten the law and made all of these things a lot more clear. And
but
so this is the death,
on,
this is the death of the rhetoric, though.
That's rewriting the law in order to cover their tracks. It has nothing to do really with the fundamentals of privacy that are being breached in that piece of legislation. I mean, you know, we're talking about Obama going around the country saying that one of the first things he's going to do as a president is he's going to take a look at all the presidential executive orders that Bush has passed during the 8 years. There's executive orders we don't even know about.
Can I jump in here, please? He really cannot do it.
I have one comment before we move off of the Obama shift here. Yes, he's weak. Yes, he's upset a lot of people on the left. But one man's flip-flop is another man's sincere wish to get elected with the understanding that he has to appeal to a greater, broader audience or constituent.
I don't disagree with that,
and
but
so,
he cannot
let me
walk
my
away
point
from
here.
His core.
So
values.
I don't think that he is disbanding his core values, but I do know and understand very clearly that he really doesn't have a choice than to appeal to a broader audience. And so while I understand the frustration with FISA, with a number of other changes, let's call them changes, then I don't think he really has a choice. He still is an underdog, but the country is not left or right. It's somewhere in the middle.
Well, you know what, guys? I'm going to move on to other topics because there's some really good ones, but I love the conversation. So if you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I am Farai Chidea, and today's Bloggers Roundtable includes Michael D. Cobb-Bowen, creator of cobb.typepad.com, Liza Sabatore of Culture Kitchen, and Sharon Toomer of blackandbrownnews.com. Let's talk about oil. The Iraqi government is opening six key oil fields to an international bidding process. This comes after the New York Times recently reported a series of no-bid consulting contracts were to be given to a handful of American oil companies. They were reportedly brokered in part by a State Department team of advisors. Now, the White House has denied influencing Iraqi oil policy. Critics say this confirms the war was always about oil and not about weapons of mass destruction. Michael, what do you think about that?
Well, wars are strange things, and everything gets attributed to a war in the end. That's the way history is written. But as far as no-bid contracts, these tend to go out to the same companies, these oil services companies, which are three or four of them, but the only ones in the world who can put out oil well fires, for example, or fix rigs when they're broken.
But it's not it's not just the oil. I mean, Iraq has been all about no-bid contracts to only American companies.
Well, but here we're saying that this is actually the first time that the process has been open to international companies. So you've had Saddam Hussein running this thing for 35 years, and finally, once and for all, once he's been deposed and removed, the Iraqi people themselves have an opportunity to get these oil revenues. And
why?
It's done.
Why do you think that it's the Iraqis? I mean, go ahead.
It's done in broad public, and the Iraqis actually obviously can't do that. They don't have the infrastructure right now to have companies that could compete with, say, Petronas or Maersk or one of the other many oil companies that are involved here.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
So I would basically say this is a move for the positive, and it kind of demystifies a process that a lot of people have been putting a lot of fear, uncertainty, and distrust about, where now it's clear
Michael,
this
Michael,
is not
Michael.
Go ahead.
But But in this discussion, why do we lose sight that we went to war for something else? We went to war for a completely different reason. Right. And as of last week, 4,116 men and women have lost their lives in combat. So how we can have this discussion and not even make mention of the reason why we went to Iraq in the first place?
Right.
I just, that's lost on me. And does that not make it, does anybody else not feel hoodwinked and bamboozled here?
Oil
absolutely. And not only that, but the cost, the human cost. There's 1.5 million refugees, Iraqi refugees, in all the adjacent countries. 2 million internal refugees displaced in the country. 50% of them are children under the age of 15. And we're talking about an unemployment rate within Iraqis right now of about, what was it the last time I read, 80%? I mean, it's ridiculous. This is not going to the Iraqis, period.
I would love to see all Americans join in any relief efforts and provide humanitarian aid. But we all know that that can't be done until the country is secure. Even the UN left the green zone. So there's a certain amount of pacification that has to be done, obviously, so we can help.
Humanitarian aid doesn't even believe
again, Michael,
begin to address.
Michael, the question that sparked this part of the discussion was it all about oil in the first place? Mm-hmm. And I remember I was sitting in front of a television, and it was about weapons of mass destruction.
Absolutely.
So I just ask you to, and you know, those who subscribe to your thinking, that be considered in your discussion or in your thinking.
Oil is
because
part of the discussion.
Again, we have lost a lot of lives. Eliza just brought up just brought up the number of refugees in Iraq. So that can't be dismissed.
It cannot be
and
dismissed.
And Alan Greenspan, didn't he come out a few months ago saying that it was all about oil?
Well, let's say it's all about oil.
Made our economy.
Let's say it's all about oil. When will we hear someone saying, again, these six fields are going to produce about 1.5 million barrels of oil, which is a significant something for Iraqis because they're doing 2.25 right now. But if we opened up Anwar, that would give us half of that oil. And it would be all of ours. So the question is,
this is wrong. This is absolutely
but
here,
let me
wrong.
Just, let I me mean, just we, ask we, this we, question.
All right, guys.
Michael, you're losing this.
Well, we're going to have to wrap up this topic because I want to make sure and get something in, particularly because Sharon and Liza, you're in New York. There's the video of a woman collapsing and dying in a Brooklyn, New York hospital emergency room last month. The surveillance video shows 49-year-old Esmond Green toppling over and falling flat on her face. It was, you know, hours before she was served, an hour before hospital employees even came to her aid. By that time, it was too late. Liza, what's the reverb in New York of this story?
Well, you know, it's the unfortunately, people are not shocked by it. And I hate to say that, particularly because it's a public-run hospital. Anybody who's gone to, I've actually been in the emergency room of Kingsborough Hospital and many years ago, and it traumatized me to no end. So it's just, and it's not only the fact that she was there. She was an immigrant also with no medical benefits, a woman that was sending money home for her family, basically, you know, supporting a whole family. I can't remember her.
Jamaica.
American. She was from Jamaica, right? Mm-hmm. So her whole story, I mean, especially with how brutal, I mean, she was in New York, but this country has had such a brutal backlash against immigrants, whether documented or undocumented. And then we have the whole economic, you know, breakdown of the health system. And so it just, you know, it's almost like a microscopic view of all what's wrong in our country when it comes to domestic policies. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, you look at her situation and you say, yeah, that happens a lot in our country.
I'm going to have to keep it tight with you guys, Liza and Michael. Michael first, do you think that this is a microcosm as
you know, I mean, Sharon and Michael, do you think it's a microcosm, as Liza says, or is it a random incident?
It's a continuing tragedy.
I think it's more than a random incident. And I think it's the same thing happened. I believe it's King's Drew Hospital in Los Angeles.
King Drew, yes.
It was an emergency room. Esmond Green was in the psychiatric unit of Kings County Hospital. And, yes, the hospital has had some serious problems in the past, but it really is a testament to that poor people really have it bad when it comes to health care. But poor people with mental health issues really, really have it bad.
I have to give Michael the last word.
Sorry.
I think, sadly, this is kind of one of those what struck me is that people should be traumatized, but there is a certain expectation that we believe that people have a right to sleep in public places. And I think the reason this could be overlooked is because we have gotten used to seeing people sleep in public places, and we don't know if they're alive or dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, on that sobering note, I want to thank you all for our roundtable today.
Thank you.
Michael D. Cobb-Bowen is the creator of Cobb.typad.com. He joined us in our NPR West studios in Culver City, California. Liza Sabatour publishes the community blog Culture Kitchen. She was at our NPR studios in New York. And Sharon Toomer is founder and managing editor of blackandbrownnews.com.